Artist Book Fair the weekend of November 2nd through 4th at Matter in Portland. Here to Stay is a celebration of publication as art. The opening will be Friday from 5 to 9, and weekend events include tea tasting, book fair, art exhibition, and more. Participants include Just Seeds Artist Cooperative, Signal Fire, Eberhardt Press, Works Progress Agency, and many other artists, writers, and activists. Again, that's Here to Stay, an artist book fair the weekend of November 2nd through 4th at Matter, 811 East Burnside Street, number 124 in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
Says Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Monday at noon, KBOO's Joe Meyer and I walked into the Multnomah County Elections Office at the invitation of the director, Tim Scott. We were given a most thorough and courteous tour. It lasted about 52 minutes. I have created a 14-minute excerpt of that event here, which originally ran on the KBOO Evening News Tuesday. But I want to run it again. Please listen carefully, because the information here can make a difference in whatever power you can exert through the ballot. I have comments to follow. How is turnout compared to 2014?
Similar. We had 70% turnout in 2014, and we have a lot more registered voters now, of course, because of motor voter. We've added almost 100,000 registered voters since 2014. So we will get a lot more ballots back. That's clear from the data we've gotten so far. The percentage may be a little lower than 70%, might be a little higher than 70%. It's hard to tell right now, but we're getting a lot of ballots back, that's for sure. We have added a lot more registered voters, obviously, and typically Oregon does rank pretty high in terms of turnout of eligible voters, and motor voter is only going to increase the number of eligible voters registered, therefore. And in Oregon, everybody who's registered gets a ballot delivered to wherever they'd like it to be delivered. So yeah, I would say Oregon is an anomaly in that instance. We get a ballot in everybody's hand that's eligible based on several different methods of registration, and we try to keep them registered.
So I was just going to kind of walk you through the path of the ballot.
Right on.
We pick up our ballots at the post office every morning. We went to the post office at 7 a.m. and got about 42 trays of ballots back. So we got a lot of ballots back. There's about 300 ballots in a tray. When we get the ballots, the first thing we do is run them through the high-speed mail sorter and capture an image of the signature. And then the database pairs up their most recent voter registration signature with that signature that we've just captured off the ballot, and then they're presented to the folks in these room to make the decision about whether or not the signature matches. And on the first level review, they only have access to that most recent voter registration signature. So if they don't think it matches based on the criteria that they've been trained on, then they reject it, and it goes to a supervisor who then looks at it again. But the supervisor has access to all the signatures that we've collected over time from an individual, from voter registration cards or for the DMV. And most often, based on that additional information, more samples of handwriting were able to change that rejected signature to a matching signature. But if the supervisor doesn't feel that they're able to find enough matching characteristics in the pair of signatures or all the samples that we have, then the voters sent a letter, and they have until 14 days after the election to send us a new sample on a new registration card. And most of the time, what they return matches, and we're able to count their ballots.
Do you know approximately what percentage or how many ballots have been rejected for no signature at this point?
Not for this election, but we could get you that data. Mm-hmm. At this point, it would be incomplete because we're still in the process of going through those. And so, for instance, when the ballots come back, we do the pass through the sorter. We do the first level review, and then we do the what we call review verify, and that's what the supervisors do. And that's what we're in the process of doing for this group of ballots that came in this morning. If you want to go into the observation room, we can look at the screens.
Well, I do, because, you know, I would consider it a very serious denial of voting rights for someone to lose their ability to vote in an election because their signature was non-matching to the point that that right had to be terminated.
It's absolutely something that we take very seriously. Yeah.
How many of the signatures do you know? What percentage of the mismatching signatures have been sent in to Secretary of State for prosecution?
A very small percentage. The ones that we send in are ones where we believe someone else entirely has signed the ballot. And that happens sometimes. I was talking to my staff this morning. They had a man call who said we had rejected his signature, and he said, well, I had my wife sign my ballot for me. And we then had to educate him that it's him that has to actually sign the ballot. That's not something...
Can't be delegated.
Can't be delegated, exactly. It's not
something
you can
give away.
That
does raise an interesting question, though. I mean, if the subset of the ones that are sent to the Secretary of State are those in which you feel reasonably certain that someone else has signed the ballot, then why would the other signatures, if you follow me, be rejected?
Well, because what we're doing is we're looking to see whether or not we can make a match based on the criteria put forth in the vote by mail manual, as I've presented to you, as well as training that these folks have received from a forensic handwriting analyst. And so we have this set of criteria that we are required by law to match against.
I appreciate you sending that information in to me. I noticed that it did not have information, for example, on how a signature changes over time due to neural degeneration. For example, my signature doesn't look like it did 20 years ago.
Sure. There's many reasons signatures change, not necessarily neural degeneration, but maturation. Say someone signs their first registration card when they're 18 years old, and they go into the workforce, and 15 years later, their signature doesn't look anything like it because they sign it 300 times a day, maybe, like I do with my signature sometimes. And they've chosen a shortened form of their signature. But we still have to match against the same characteristics. So if there's not enough left that we can match against, if their signature has changed so much that we can't find enough matching characteristics to make a match, then we send a letter. And that's the opportunity for the person to reach out to us and say, oh yeah, my signature's changed. Here's my new signature. And we should be able to count their ballot.
If I sign Joe Meyer and on registration's Joseph Meyer, will you still match that? Or?
If the handwriting is the same, we will match it. Yes, we don't have to have the exact signature as you've matched. Sometimes we can see that someone, as their signature has matured, starts dropping maybe the end of their last name, something like that. It degenerates into squiggles at a certain point. And that's, they're doing that
because you get old and you don't care.
Well, or you just, you know, speed. You know, you're trying to write your name fast. You've practiced writing your name fast over and over and over, and you start dropping some of the letters. But if we can make a match on, say, the first name, or you've got very distinct characteristics in the first letter of your first name and the first letter of your last name, oftentimes those characteristics along with the size and relationship of the letters to each other, the position on the line, the spacing between letters, all those things we can consider. So you wouldn't necessarily have to put Joseph if that's the way you signed your registration card, but we would have enough to go on. And it's interesting, after looking at many signatures, thousands and thousands of signatures over my 10-year career here, that even as people age into disability sometimes, you can still find enough similarities between the style of their previous handwriting and their current handwriting. And in a lot of times, those instances we're able to make a match and say, yes, it does match, but it's clear that their signature has changed. So a lot of times we're saying, yes, it's matching, but we're still sending a letter and saying, could we get a new sample from you? Could we get a new registration card with a new signature that more reflects your current handwriting and your current signature?
Well, shall we proceed?
Yes, let's proceed.
As we've transitioned to vote by mail, our elections office has started looking more and more like a mail processing plant.
Well, this is a clean-looking machine. It's apparently a German manufacturer. Says Böwe, Bell, and Howell. And it's got a big sign above it that says OK, so it's ready to go. I think I hear the vacuum going on it. What's the spoilage rate with this machine?
What do you mean by spoilage?
What is the ballot spoilage rate? Does the machine
doesn't break ballots?
That's wonderful.
No. We're going to go in right here. This is our this room is our ballot tally room, where we actually do the counting of the ballots. And as I mentioned, we use digital imaging. So these are essentially just high-speed digital scanners that are here, made by Fujitsu. So the laptops that you see are Dell's.
Can you tell me the model?
It's Dell Precision M2800.
And looking again at this laptop, I see that the USB port has been blocked with a little blue piece of plastic.
Right.
Do these laptops have a Wi-Fi capacity? Do they have Bluetooth? Do they have infrared?
So we don't. The whole idea behind this room is that there's no data that flows into or out of it. That network only exists inside this room. That server stack over on in the corner there serves this network, and that's it. We're not on the county network. We're not on the internet. And so we've taken a lot of security precautions to make sure that no one could access this room. Number one, as you saw, there's you have to have a badge that's programmed to get into this room, and then once you're in, if you do happen to get in, you can't run in and immediately do damage. We have all the USB ports blocked with numbered security seals, so if if one of those was removed, we would know that it had been tampered with and all the seals are recorded. The laptops themselves have been hardened so that they only run a specific set of programs. So if somebody tried to load another program on the laptop, it just wouldn't run. I'll take you back in the signature verification room and we'll pull up the match so you can see what they're looking at. So if you get closer, you can take a look there. And so for instance, like this one right here, you can see that there's almost no resemblance between this signature and this signature.
Uh-huh.
In this one, all we really have is a similar A.
We had an A.
But there isn't much else that matches there. And the rules say that we have to find multiple matching characteristics in order to call it a match.
Huh?
And again, like I mentioned, that's what we will be doing, is sending a letter, and then that person will have until 14 days after the election to send us a new registration card. And most likely that is just a signature maturing right there, and they'll have an opportunity to provide a signature that matches the ballot. And then again, you have some that are just, there's not enough to go on. If people have a very stylized signature, and don't get me wrong, we match a lot of very stylized signatures because they do it exactly the same way every time. But if they don't, then we have a problem making a match because it's not using standard copybook letters and we're looking at essentially a squiggle on the line.
Well, and we're looking at three examples, and I could see what you were talking about, that the one on the left could very well be someone aging, and the one on the right was very stylized, but it was an attempt. It looked like a very different attempt because the initial stylized, I'll just go ahead and say it was an M, slanted a great deal, and the other one didn't. And the one in the middle didn't even seem to have the same letters.
Right.
Okay, well, let me ask you this then from a political or opinion frame. In that first case I was talking about, in which we, you know, both agreed that the signature could very well be a case of someone aging and becoming more indistinct in their signature, wouldn't it be better to keep that signature? Because after all, rejection of a vote, which very well might be, even though you send out a letter, very well might be that person doesn't get to vote in an election. And that's something that's done to felons, or in a lot of states, it's not even done to felons.
Well, again, these are the rules that we have to follow that are put forth in the Vote by Mail manual, and we have to follow the law.
But there's surely some leeway in terms of how carefully, how exactly one might want to interpret it if it rejects valid. I mean, because,
well, how
for
do
example,
I know it's valid?
How do you know it's valid?
Mason,
you know,
given the rules that we have to operate under, which is finding multiple matching characteristics within a given sample, that's what we have to go on. What I would suggest is that if there is a desire by you or others to change the law to give us a new standard to operate to, we would operate to that new standard. Our job really is to make sure that the laws are followed and that the election is conducted fairly.
And this is Joe Meyer with KBO News.
Teresa Mitchell, KBO News. Okay, so that was an interview with the Multnomah County Elections Director, Tim Scott, and he was adamant in his insistence that his hands are tied by the signature regulations. This is not the case. But in the final conversation, he and I are in agreement that the signature in question, that one you can hear a voice saying in A, signature in question came from the voter and no one else. That should be the criterion that supersedes all others, that this ballot came from that registered voter. But for Tim, and to be fair for other elections directors who accept this paradigm, that voter's constitutional right to have that ballot, to vote with that ballot, must be denied on technicality. Now, Tim emphasizes that the voters are sent a letter, and they have 14 days and all that sort of thing, but in practical terms, as the election rolls forward, that means most rejected signatures are simply lost. Most people do not have time to come in and sign again before the votes are counted. And in the case of the GMO fight in 2014, 4,600 more ballots were rejected statewide, and though KBOO and other organizations tried to get the word out, even as corporate media poo-pooed it, the election was lost to the corporate interests that sunk more than $1 million into their effort. Still, it became apparent as the vote changed during the period of time allowed for people to re-sign their ballots during that recount that all of those ballots actually, had all those ballots actually been counted, the measure would have won. That's just a fact. And the numbers are the numbers, and they stand there and won't change. You can work it out in terms of percentages. As the votes were coming in, it was clear that that measure was going to lose. I mean, that the corporate interests were going to lose, and GMO labeling was going to win. So for the time being, I insist that you not only vote, but use the internal system, the internet system set up by Multnomah County Elections to make damn sure your vote was counted. Note that the current Senator Merkley was put over the top by the Multnomah County vote, which was mysteriously delayed that year when he was first elected until Stephen Konzer and I showed up with questions. And a final note, there's a lot of discussion of security, and I believe that the Tim Scott is sincere in trying to keep the election secure. However, I noticed, and I talked to him about the fact that the administrative laptops in that secure room were not protected with seals, and he said, in effect, that it wasn't practical and they were trying to get around to it. And I bring that up just because there are such determined efforts that come out of the Republican Party and the billionaires who support the Republican Party to throw elections, because they can't win elections now. They are a minority. So, you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm going to read a bit from a letter from Anne Frank's father here. I'll explain the significance in a moment if it's not already evident. It's dated April 30th, 1941, and it refers to efforts Otto Frank had been making for his family since 1938. He wrote to a friend, "I am forced to look out for immigration, and as far as I can see, the USA is the only country we could go to. Perhaps you remember that we have two girls. It is for the sake of the children mainly that we have to care for. Our own fate is of less importance. Two brothers of Effeth emigrated last year, and they work as ordinary workmen around Boston. Both of them earn money, but not enough to have us come. They would be able to give an affidavit for their mother living with us here, and they saved enough, as far as I can make out, to pay the passage for my mother-in-law. In 1938, I filed an application in Rotterdam, Otto Frank wrote, to immigrate to the USA, but all the papers have been destroyed there." And skipping ahead, "The dates of application are no importance any longer, as everyone who has an effective affidavit from a member of his family and who can pay his passage may leave. One says that no special difficulties shall be made from the part of the German authorities, but in the case that an affidavit from family members is not available or not sufficient, the consul asks a bank deposit. How much he would ask in my case, I don't know. I'm not allowed to go to Rotterdam without an introduction. The consul would not even accept me. As far as I hear from other people, it might be about $5,000. Now, I want to depart from his letter for a moment and point out that $5,000 in U.S. funds in 1941 is $88,000 now. And he says that would be for us four. You are the only person I know I can ask. Would it be possible for you to give a deposit in my favor? And that's the end of the excerpt from Otto Frank, and we know what happened to Anne. It is well to remember that in 1941, the order had not been given to exterminate the Jews, and no one outside the Nazi leadership could comprehend the virulent putrescence that was between Hitler's ears at the time. It's just not the sort of thing that you want to think about, that you want to think that your fellow citizens are capable of. Otto Frank could look about him and find plenty of genuinely sympathetic faces in 1941. It was reasonable for him to feel that there was a peaceful way out. I had a telephone conversation with my sweetheart earlier this week. She is traveling. It's about the consequences of social backlash and what it means for us personally. My partner of 24 years is a bearded dyke, a pagan witch or curandera, if you like, and I am transgender. And also, if I may use the term more technically, physically an intersexed, or if you prefer, androgyne woman, a post-operative transsexual. Word has already come through the whispers of left alternative news that transgender people's passports are being revoked by the Trump administration's bigoted minions in the State Department. It is clear that we, among our friends and colleagues who are not conservative white males, have been targeted. And the question is it too late to get out? The hegemony of fascism in this or any society does not require that a majority of people be against the targeted groups, against the criminalized, the hated groups. If that were the case, it could never prevail. Because when you add up the numbers of progressive white men and women, and original Americans, and blacks, and Asian and Pacific people, and GLBTQ and Latinx, we are together a majority. And moreover, a majority that is far, far to the left of the government that oppresses us all. On the contrary, fascism requires exactly the conditions we see today. There are six elements already in place. First, there has long been a seething, determinedly ignorant, violent minority of white men in the U.S., which looks back to slavery literally and thinks that it could return to what it imagines are glory days of conquest and unquestioned privilege. Second, this plurality and the women who depend on them for validation have been energized and promoted in their worst and most atavistic degeneracy by a heartless, vain, greedy, power-hungry demagogue. Note that he has put out a violently, blatantly racist ad just yesterday against all Latinx persons. A racist smear, openly promoted on the television. You can find it. Look at how they act now. Look at the massacres, but also look at the contorted faces when they see someone like me. Look at the chorus. Maybe that's something only I can see. I see those contorted faces. I see that ugliness. I see that shininess in the eye. Look at the chorus of voices. Listen to the chorus of voices that roars approval when a peaceful demonstrator is struck aside by a car. It's happening here. Look at what they say. Look at the way the Portland police invite invasion by out-of-state fascists. Look at how they coddled them. Look. That aforementioned demagogue is now showing his fangs, adding to his whiteness branding with the statement, in the context of mass murder for whiteness, that he is a nationalist. Here's a third element. His statements have legitimized the raging infection of fascists that have sickened our national, state, and local police forces. Fourth, he has appointed fascists to power in all the executive branch agencies and has packed the courts. Fifth, he has hinted that should his power be dislodged by an electoral victory, his followers should reject it and go to war. Sixth, the majority of American people are so uneducated as to history and even the most basic understanding of the structure of government and corporate hegemony and imperial war that they are paralyzed by events and unable to help themselves. At this point, they are largely unaware that this has come about. Significantly for you and I, they are unable to help anyone else if they have the desire. And that's a big if. These are the conditions that allowed the idiotic, deranged minority in Italy and Japan and Germany in the middle of the last century to take power. It's here now. Time has run out. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Finally, I want to bring up some news that the planet is in terrible condition. Researchers say that the world has seriously underestimated the amount of heat soaked up by our oceans over the past 25 years. This is from BBC. This is another story that falls in the category of the acceleration is accelerating in climate change. This is from BBC. They write, their study suggests that the seas have absorbed 60% more heat than previously thought. They say it means the Earth is more sensitive to fossil fuel emissions than estimated. This could make it much more difficult to keep global warming within safe levels this century. According to the last major assessment by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the world's oceans have taken up over 90% of the excess heat trapped by greenhouse gases. But this new study says that every year for the past 25 years, we have put about 150 times the amount of energy used to generate electricity globally into the seas, 60% more than previous estimates. That's a big problem. Now, I'm going to read a bit more on this, but remember, right now, you're getting pressure from your corporate rulers trying to blame you for climate change. You are not to blame, and moreover, your efforts to save, to recycle, to bicycle are admirable, and they are not nearly the significance for climate change as the corporate sector. It is the corporate sector that is doing this, that is adhering to fossil fuels, because for the time being, for their short-term profits, which is what always drives them, it's cheap. And you little people can die. Get your own bunkers. Spend a million or two. Go back to the BBC article. Scientists base their predictions about how much the Earth is warming by adding up all the excess heat that is produced by a known amount of greenhouse gases that have been emitted by human activities. This new calculation shows that far more heat than we thought has been going into oceans, but it means that far more heat than we thought has been generated by the warming gases we have emitted. Therefore, more heat from the same amount of gas means the Earth is more sensitive to CO2. Implications of the finding. The researchers involved in the study believe the new finding will make it much harder to keep within the temperature rise targets set by the governments in the Paris Agreement. Recently, the IPCC spelled out clearly the benefits to the world of keeping below the lower goal of 1.5 degrees centigrade relative to pre-industrial levels. The new study says that that will be very difficult indeed. So there's more to that article. It's pretty much on the front page of bbc.co.uk. The news section, I think, comes across in the U.S. as bbc.com. Stay tuned. Per Fagering is going to be in here talking about the ultra-right presidential candidate Bolsonaro in Brazil. At Tenet's Flashpoints at 11 Between the Covers and 11:30 Black Book Talk, all these programs, KBOO programs, are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kbo.fm and click on Donate. You've been listening to Press Watch on 90.7 and other frequencies in Cascadia and via kbo.fm to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Art Afan with Impact on Saturday, November 3rd from 6 to 9 p.m. at Lewis and Clark College in Portland. Art Afan with Impact is a 12-hour creativity and wellness festival. Young people are invited to participate in groups. In 8 hours, each group will create an original artwork that is connected to themes of mental health and wellness. A festival from 6 until 9 showcases all performances and artwork open for all to attend. Again, that's the Art-A-Thon with Impact on Saturday, November 3rd from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Agnes Flanagan Chapel at Lewis and Clark College, 0615 Southwest Palatine Hill Road in Portland. More information may be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener and members and support from the League of Women Voters of Portland, providing unbiased election information online featuring a personalized guide, including candidate answers to questions, explanations.